thank you for joining me this evening. I will be here with you tonight, and I return tomorrow night. And we've got another great show lined up for you. Time travel. That'll be part of our topic tomorrow night. Jeff Belanger joins me for the first 2 hours of the show. We'll talk about time travel and some really interesting aspects of time and what time is. Jeff Belanger in the first 2 hours of the show. Time travel and time slips. Then Michelle Zirkel Markham will join us for the last 2 hours. She's an author from West Virginia who's written about her experience of her home being visited by a demonic spirit manifesting itself as water coming from nowhere. And we'll talk about her very strange encounters. We'll do that tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, Steph Young is my guest for the next hour as we talk about strange encounters in the woods, strange beings, creatures, sightings, and more. I want to take a quick break so we can get right back into the show here. And when we come back, let's discuss. Some people have been found brutally mauled and attacked in the woods, but when the tests come back, it's not any known animal that has attacked them. They haven't found the bite marks, scratch marks, or patterns. What could be attacking people in the woods? What is causing these strange encounters? We'll get some insights from our guest and hear some of the most bizarre stories she's collected for her 10 different books. We'll do that next. Stay tuned. Sitting in for George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest this evening, Steph Young. She's an author and researcher and has been looking into strange occurrences in the woods, from disappearances, attacks, and sightings of unusual beings. We're here to talk with her about some of the more bizarre stories that she's collected in her books. You were talking about that you've seen stories come from all around the world, and you've got some interesting stories from New Mexico. Maybe we could kind of start there as we launch into our bizarre journey this evening. Steph, welcome back to the show, and let's start off in New Mexico. What can you tell us about some of the encounters there?
Well, this particular one started on Halloween night in 1988, and it was in the early hours of the morning when a farmer called Larry Rivers was driving along a dirt road off Highway 80 when he came across a man walking. So he slowed down the car and he opened his window and he asked the man, "What are you doing out here?" And the man, who was dressed just in shorts and t-shirt, said to him, "I'm looking for the beast." Well, the farmer was a bit confused, so he drove off. And the man who was in the shorts and t-shirt was called David Stone. Well, this is believed to have been the last time that he was seen alive. And it wasn't until the 5th of November that his car was found, abandoned off the highway. He wasn't reported missing until almost a week after that last sighting, because his father discovered that he hadn't arrived for a wedding that he was going to be best man at. And his body wasn't actually found for 4 years. When his father discovered that his son was missing, he phoned all the sheriff's offices from San Diego, where the boy had set off, all the way up to El Paso, where the wedding was. But none of the police has had any reports about the man. And it wasn't until the local sheriffs in southwest New Mexico, near Rodeo, about 15 miles from South Forks Road, found his car, and it was parked at a really odd angle across the road. So this began the search for him, which was to go on for about 2 weeks. And during the time, the former deputy sheriff, William Cavalier, said, "This is just the strangest thing that's ever happened. It's the most bizarre thing." Well, the search was really comprehensive, and they had planes out looking for him and hundreds of searchers covering the ground with bloodhounds, but there was no sign of him. They did find his tracks, and this led them on a very strange journey because he seemed to have left behind a trail of really bizarre clues. So as the searchers followed his trail, at first they came to a small pile of rocks that had been formed into a pyramid shape and enclosed in a triangle of rocks. And they also said that his car was parked near the Pyramid Mountains. Well, the search continued, and the next day the searchers found another pile of rocks formed into a pyramid shape. And this was in the northwest direction from where he'd left the car. Well, beside the rocks this time was the missing man's Rolex watch. Well, he was a stockbroker, so he was quite wealthy. So they knew it was his watch, trail carried on again, and a couple of miles further on, they found, written in the sand of the desert floor, the Fibonacci sequence. But instead of the traditional correct sequence, which would be 1, 1, 2, 3, and onward, and it should have gone up to 21, he'd actually ended the sequence incorrectly at 18. So they were thinking, well, would he have made that mistake? And also, of course, why was he leaving that clue? Was he deliberately trying to leave some kind of clue that he was in trouble? But what was happening to him? So did somebody have him? Had they abducted him? But there were no other footprints. So they couldn't understand what had happened. Well, the bloodhounds carried on the search, and it was a 13-mile trek. And they found that his scent ended near to the highway, Highway 80, but it just simply stopped. So it didn't go right up to the highway. So you could say, well, maybe he was put in a car and taken, but his tracks didn't go that far. So they also searched his car, and in the car, they found that he'd written a note. And the note said, they think the word is in the safe. Six knives in Rob's room. You buy your tea and you take your chances. Halloween. Well, nobody has been able to work out what that message means. And I guess the saying is as an old Cockney saying, but it kind of means, you know, buyer beware. You know, you take your chances when you buy this. Well, maybe was he referring to some kind of drug perhaps that he'd taken? I don't know. But, well, it was to be 4 years before they actually found his body, and hunters came across it. They just stumbled across it about a mile off the highway. And at first, the one of the hunters, Ken Melberg, he thought it was probably animal bones. But as he got closer, he saw that the first thing that he picked up was actually a human jawbone. And so they reported it to the police. And when the remains were examined, the forensic examiner, Dr. Manny Edsharmi, said there's no reason to believe that there was any trauma and he didn't sustain any injury before or at the time of his death. So there really was no explanation as to what happened to him. And, of course, why was his body not found when they searched everywhere and there was no injury to his body? And he'd left these really strange messages. And who was the beast? Because several other witnesses before the farmer had actually seen him as well, and he'd said the same thing to all of them, I'm looking for the beast. So, you know, it's never really been solved.
That's unbelievable. Now, have they had any other strange disappearances like that in the same area, or was this a one-off?
Well, that was a one-off that I've found. People have gone missing in that area still, but not with as many strange clues. So that's really a mysterious one. I think that's what intrigues me. When, you know, if you've got something that you can kind of look into, I know that the story about the man going missing in Wyoming that I looked into as well has got so many different angles, and that's what's kind of intriguing, because you've got things that you can try and work out. You know, if somebody just disappears and there's nothing to go on, it's harder. But when there's clues, it's even more kind of tantalizing.
Right. I just didn't know if we've had other similar experiences, you know, in that exact same location, or, you know, any other reports of that. Because, you know, it seems strange that you'd have something that bizarre happen and no trace of it before or after happening like that. I mean, why would that area, why would he have been in that area? Why would it have taken place like that? But there's, you know, if there was some kind of predatorial beast out there, why wouldn't it have done something like this before or after?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. So strange. Now, you've got another story, and this kind of fascinates me because there's so many weird twists and turns in this. Can you tell us the story of Don Kemp?
Yeah. He was a New York advertising executive. This was back in 1984. And he was also an avid researcher into Abraham Lincoln, specifically his assassination. Well, this story itself, it comprises of so many different elements, from UFOs, cattle mutilations, seances, robberies, deaths. So He had taken off from New York. He'd packed his car up and he'd taken all his possessions, including all of his research notes, which were quite substantial. And he was going to go off to Wyoming and write a book about the assassination. Well, he set off, and the next day his car was found abandoned with the lights on and the engine running, the doors open, and all of his belongings were trailing out of the car. There were some footprints that led off into the prairie, but they simply stopped. Well, when the police started looking, although it was winter, there wasn't any snow initially, so they did a thorough search, and strangely, they found in a barn 6 miles away three socks, which they said belonged to him, and some firewood. But there was no sign of him. So they'd gone all over with a helicopter, with searchers, no trace at all. Well, about 3 months later, a very good friend of his, who's now an artist called Judy, who lives in New York, received some phone calls. And she was out of town, so she came back and she found the answer phone messages. Now, she was adamant that it was his voice, and she said he sounded a bit strained. Well, when she phoned the number back, a man answered, and she said, "Is this Don?" And he said, "Yes." And then he said, no, it's not. Well, the police traced the number to this trailer park in Wyoming. And they interviewed the man who owned the trailer, and he said, "I've got no idea what you're talking about." But the really weird thing about it was that his sister, Don's sister, later said he could have been his twin. He could have been Don's twin. It was almost like they were doppelgangers. So that's really strange. And yet he denied making the phone calls. He said, "I've got nothing to do with it." Well, the search was called off for the boy after about 4 days, because snow came down. So the police stuck to the version that they believed he'd had some kind of nervous breakdown, he'd left the car, he'd walked off into the prairie, and he'd died somewhere of exposure. But of course they couldn't find his body. Well, 4 years later, they came across his body. So somebody found it quite close to where his car had been. And the police took it to the forensic examiner, who said, "Well, he's obviously died of exposure." But the strange thing was that the family got a phone call from a doctor who worked at the Smithsonian Institute called Dr. Sprinkler. Now, he liaised with the FBI, and he used to train them in forensic pathology. He phoned the family, and he said, "I would really like to see the body." So they said, "Okay," and the body was sent to the Smithsonian. Well, when he investigated it, he told the family that the body was in pristine condition. He said there's no way that he's been dead for 4 years. He's been dead for maybe 2 or 3 years, and his body is mummified. It's in perfect condition, and there's a really strange hole in his head. It's a tiny hole, and there's also a bone missing from his it's called the hyoid bone, which connects your tongue in your mouth. So that was missing, and this strange hole in the head, and he tried to replicate it, and he said there's not a tool known to man that could make that incision. Well, the sister said, it gets so much stranger than I've sort of said at the time, because when his body was found, she received phone calls from a paranormal group who were in the area camping out, and they said, "We're in the area because there's been some cattle mutilations and we're investigating them. We think that your brother was taken by them." And she said, "Well, I don't know anything about UFOs or anything like that." There's no shows on TV at that time that would have given her knowledge about UFOs and mutilations, so she thought they were just crazy. But she did say as well that her brother, before he left, had given her a book. And it was just a book about the universe. And he said, "Turn to this page, and you may need this in the future, but I don't really know why." And it was a book, a page about the Pleiades. So, again, she just put it on her bookshelf. Well, after, of course, the doctor said he couldn't replicate it, she told some more of the story, and she said, "But I think it all started way before he disappeared, when we went to the Museum of Abraham Lincoln in Maryland. And when we walked in the door, the receptionist said to us, 'Are you the person that's writing a book on Abraham Lincoln?' And her brother said, 'Yes.' And she said, well, I've been asked to give you this card. And the card was from a psychic who lived nearby. So he phoned the psychic and she said, I want you to have a seance with us. So they went there, and there was a group of them, and they all sat around the table, and he'd taken his camera and a recording device. So they were recording it, and they had a seance. Well, the psychic told them all about their childhood, things that she would never have known. So they believed she was telling the truth. And then all of a sudden, she started choking, and the psychic had a red line that suddenly started appearing across her neck. The room went freezing cold, and suddenly they thought they could see this apparition of a woman in an old-fashioned dress, like a bustle, standing in the hallway. And the sister said the noise just took off. It was insanely loud in there. Well, the brother didn't know what else to do, and he just gathered everybody, and he said, say the Lord's Prayer. So they just started praying, and eventually the noise died down. Well, the sister said, I would never go back and do a seance again, but I know that my brother did.
Hmm.
Well, after the brother's body was found, the mother asked one of his friends if he would go and pick up the car and bring it back. So he did that, and on the way home, he stopped at a motel for the night. And when he came back out in the morning, the car had been broken into, and a lot of the personal records and research notes were gone. He drove on, and he delivered the car back home to the mother. It was broken into again, and more of the notes were taken. They decided to donate it to an enthusiast and researcher into Abraham Lincoln. Well, his house burned down in a fire, and he died inside with the fire and with the notes. They were gone. The rest that were left, they had some audio recordings that hadn't been in the car, and they donated them to a man who owned a Civil War store. Well, again, he died in a very strange accident, and the notes disappeared. So this seemed to go on. And she said it was only after all of his notes had gone that people stopped dying. And she's never found an explanation as to what happened to her brother. And she says, I know it's crazy, but I don't know which direction to go in to find an answer. And it's never really been explained.
Is she worried about her own safety because of these stories and because of what had happened to her brother?
It didn't seem that she was, no. But she did say that he did say to her before he disappeared, I found something, you know, whilst researching. But he wouldn't tell her what it was. So is there a possibility that, of course, he was perhaps abducted? Somebody stopped the car and took him away because of something he found out, perhaps. And then I suppose they took him back to where he disappeared from. So maybe he found out something in his research notes. And maybe it had nothing to do with, you know, UFOs and the Pleiades. And maybe that was just some kind of weird disinformation thing. I don't know.
All right. I've got to think, too, putting all this information together, if there is some kind of weird conspiratorial thing going on for some of these people being wiped out, I always ask my guests, are you ever worried because you're researching this so much that puts you into the crosshairs for whoever might be doing these things?
No, I'm not worried. No.
Well, you've got more guts than I do, that's for sure. We got about a minute left in this segment. Now, are you collecting more stories for future books as well?
Yeah, always. I'm always collecting stories. Yeah.
What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they've had encounters or want to share what's happened to them or their loved ones?
Well, my email is Stephen, which is Stephen Young, author at hotmail.com, or I'm on Facebook, which is Steph Young, author. So either of those would be lovely.
All right, so you can check it out. We've got some links and information up on the website. You can always email me, dave@darknessradio.com, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll forward you her contact information that way as well. We've got a lot more stories to share in the next half an hour, more creepy creatures, more baffling stories, and that's coming up next. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. My guest, Steph Young, as we're talking about strange encounters in the woods, bizarre things happening in the woods around us, abductions, disappearances, unexplained phenomena. What does she think is going on? Well, we're talking to her. She's the author of 10 different books on the subject, and she has a lot of strange stories to share. We're going to talk about some more of those. Ingredients in the stories that include things from astral battles, the fae folk, nature spirits, demonic, supernatural intervention, and so much more. I just feel like we're not even going to scratch the surface with this 2 hours we've got with her. But we'll open up phone lines next hour. If you have your own strange encounters in the woods you'd like to share or other topics, you can feel free to give me a call and share those stories as well. Let me tell you, if you like what you hear on Coast to Coast AM, you're going to love seeing it on Beyond Belief, George Norrie's TV show. Did you know George had a show? Well, it's true, and you could check it out for yourself, beyondbelief.com, and check out all of the great topics that he covers. You get the visual perspective of a lot of the different topics you hear about here on Coast to Coast AM. Always entertaining, engaging, and educational. So check it out for yourself. BeyondBelief.com is the way to check it out. And since the holidays are upon us, you're going to want to give the gift of Coast to Coast to your friends or maybe just to yourself. Take us on the road with you, podcastable everywhere, by becoming a Coast Insider. You can go to CoastToCoastAM.com, become a Coast Insider. A one-year subscription breaks down to just 15 cents a day. Only 15 cents a day will get you access to all of the great topics that we cover on the show, all the amazing guests. There's one-on-one chats with George Norrie and some of the other guests you hear as well on the website. You get exclusive content and more. Plus, you can hear all of the episodes I've been a host of for the last 3.5 years by simply becoming a Coast Insider. So go check it out at CoastToCoastAM.com. And if you like me, you like listening in when I'm here, I'll be back again tomorrow night when we talk about strange encounters with a demonic force. And we'll be talking to Jeff Belanger in the first 2 hours about time travel, the possibilities and prospects of time travel, and some of the stranger stories he's collected from people claiming to have had time slips and time travelers. So I hope that you'll join us for that show as well. And I'm the host of Darkness Radio. You can hear me Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight at darknessradio.com or in the Twin Cities on AM 1130 at the Twin Cities News Talk Station. The show is live streamed every night from the website at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, DarknessRadio.com, and the best bit, as soon as our show wraps up at midnight, George Norrie and Coast to Coast continues your journey into the strange and supernatural. So hear the best in paranormal talk radio Monday through Friday with Darkness Dave and Tim Dennis, and then keep it tuned right in for George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM. We've got more with Steph Young and more mysterious things taking place in the woods around us. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. Steph Young is our guest for the remainder of this hour. Steph Young is the author of over 10 books regarding all the strange phenomena that takes place in the woods. And I hope you'll check out her information, her books, and work, because it is fascinating. Some very creepy tales she's collected. And we'll have links up to that at Coast to Coast AM, so you can go check that out as well. And then next hour, Steph will be gone, but we're going to open up phone lines. And if you've had strange encounters with the woods, in the woods with creatures, creatures that aren't just walking around that you'd expect in the woods, that is, we'd love to hear from you and any other topic you'd like to open up and discuss on the show. All right, let's get back to it. The next 20 minutes is going to fly on us, Steph, and I want to try to hear some of your other favorite stories. What is one of the creepiest stories that you've collected that we haven't spoken about yet?
I think it's the story of Nettie Fornario. She grew up in London in the early 1900s, and she was an orphan, and she lived with her grandparents. Well, from a young age, she'd shown a really keen interest in spiritualism and the possibility of communing with the dead, I guess probably because of her parents. Well, she was very involved in attending spiritualist meetings, and she also wrote reviews for the Occult Review magazine. Well, one day she decided that she was going to take herself off to a place called Iona, which is an island off the Hebrides. And at the time, it had no water, no electricity, and it was very remote. Well, she took lodgings with a family there, and they said that she would always go out at night, and she'd roam the moors, and then she would come back in the morning, and she spent the rest of the day in her room writing in a journal. But then one day, She frantically came home and she told the mother of the family that she had to leave immediately. She didn't say why, and the family were confused because no letter had arrived for her, so they didn't understand what was wrong. But she said, I've got to go. Well, they said, it's a Sunday, there's no ferry to take you back to the mainland. But she insisted that they take all her luggage down to the ferry, and when they returned to the house, they assumed that she'd just gone back into her room. Well, they didn't see her for the rest of the day or the night, and then the next day they didn't see her at all. So when it came to the evening, the mother knocked on the door and no answer, so she opened up and went in, and all of her belongings were there, but she wasn't there. But in the fireplace lay her journal, so she'd burnt it. Well, they decided they'd better go and look for her because it was 2 days now and they hadn't seen her. So they set off across the island, and it was only about 4 miles wide, and it wasn't thickly covered by trees, it was moorland. So they looked all over, but they couldn't find her. Well, one of them went over and got the police from the mainland and brought them back, and they looked again the next day. And it was actually one of the dogs that led them to find her. And when they came across her body, she was laid out on the moor. Underneath her body, a cross had been marked in the grass, carved. And she was wearing a long robe, and it had sigils on the lapels. And she had a knife in her hand, but they had to pry it out of her hand because it was in a death grip. And they said that her face was just one of sheer terror. So it looked like she'd, you know, been absolutely terrified before she died. But the really strange thing was, although her toes were cut and bleeding, the soles of her feet were completely clean. There was no mark on them, no dirt, nothing. But to get to where she got to, she would have to have walked there, and she didn't have any shoes, so her toes were bleeding and that was it. Well, when the people who knew her found out, a lady called Dion Fortune, who was one of the members of the order that she belonged to, which was with Samuel Matters. It was founded after they were kicked out of the order that Aleister Crowley was in. Well, she said, I know what's happened. She was battling with the wife of the head of the order, and the wife killed her. Well, she was talking about a dead wife. And she said that they had this fight on the astral plane because apparently Aleister Crowley and Samuel Matters had fought on the astral plane and summoned demons and, you know, had this battle. Well, so that was her opinion. She said that's what happened. But actually another friend of hers said, well, you know, she was obsessed with trying to contact the green elementals, the green elementals being the fairies, and that she was trying to communicate with them. Well, there was a long history of fairies being on the island, and a 7th century abbot had written about them, and Dr. Samuel Johnson, the famous diarist, had said about them there on the island. Well, you know, that sounded a bit insane, but she was also obsessed with an opera that was written by a man, but he actually wrote as a woman as well. He had a pen name. And this opera was about these fairies, and she'd gone to see it about 20 times and written about it. But the twist in it also is that the man himself who'd written this opera, he used to live on the island, so perhaps that's why she went there. Well, one day as a child, he had gone to see his friend to go out to play. But when he got to the house, his friend wasn't there. So he asked the mother, and the mother said, she's been gone for 2 days. And he said, well, where's she gone? And she said, well, she thought that the monks who used to live on the island, she said they were attacking her. She said, so she took herself off to the only place that she knew she'd be safe at. Well, this place was called the Fairy Mound, and this was the exact same spot that Nettie was found in, dead, with this knife in her hand, and she had strange scratch marks over her body as well. So, I mean, the police have said that Nettie died of exposure, but her heart had stopped as well. At the same time, there was a report from witnesses about seeing this strange shrouded figure who had a hood over his face. And there were also reportedly strange blue lights in the sky. So again, it seems that there were really strange things going on, and there was really no kind of answer. But the mysterious thing was, how were her feet completely clean?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's so many weird aspects of that. But can I ask you, I mean, since you're over in Europe and I'm sure familiar with the fairy tales and legends and lore, you know, there are these tales which sound comical to us here in the United States and in other countries, I'm sure, when you talk about the fairy folk and you know, the elementals and some of this, and it just sounds like fairy tales, if you will. And certainly Disney has had a big hand in the destruction of what people believe or understand fairies to be. When we look at some of the stories throughout history, the urban legends, if you will, they always seem to revolve around don't go into the woods because the boogeyman will get you. It's always a way to keep the kids in control. You know, don't do this. You know, if you curse or swear, the bloody bones man will get you and, you know, eat your tongue or do these horrific things. With fairy folk and the legends surrounding it, were they warnings of, you know, of trying to control the children, trying to control maybe the more ignorant? Or do you believe that there is some weird truth to the idea of these legendary creatures?
I do kind of think there's a weird truth to it. I do think there is. Yes, they were scare stories. But you know, in Ireland, they used to actually kill women quite often because they believed that they were changelings, that they'd been swapped out. And they used to go around and kill them. So certainly they believed in them. I mean, I don't know. I was recently contacted by a man who actually says that he can see these things. And I'm sure that he can. I don't know. I can't see them. But strangely enough, there is a story as well from a man called Mr. Johns, and this was back in the 1940s, and he contacted a bulletin called the Borderland Sciences Research, again, about seeing these strange elementals, and which he said were responsible for committing perfect murders. But this was
Wow.
in the Mendocino mountain range in California, and he'd moved there with his mother to build a homestead, and it was very remote. And when they moved there, they hired a lumberjack to cut down some of the trees, and they were going to take these wood piles to the nearest town to sell them so that they could raise some more money to create their house. Well, they left him for 2 days, and when they came back, the lumberjack said to them, "I don't want your money, and I'm going right now." And they said, "Well, what's the matter?" And he said, "I'm leaving now." He wouldn't tell them what was wrong. Well, the man himself, Mr. John, said, "Well, you know, we just carried on, and we had some very strange experiences," he said, "because we didn't have any running water where we were, but every night we'd hear sounds that sounded like horses lapping at the water." And another time, he said, the door handle started moving on its own. It was being turned. He said, and I shot through the window and shot through the door. And he said, and I opened the door afterwards, there's nothing there. But then when I went back inside, the door handle was moving again. Well, he said, another time we were just looking out the window, and we'd see these saucer-shaped eyes, and they were about 5 inches wide. And he said, then I'd go back outside, and there was nothing there. I'd come back inside, they'd start appearing again in the window. Well, this went on for ages, and he said as well that strange lights would be above his house, and it felt like they were in a street because it was so bright, but they could never find a source of it. Well, he shrugged it off, and he was out working on the land one day when he said these little beings appeared to him, and he called them sylphs and nymphs. And he said they would ask him really silly questions, like childish questions, saying, "What's a gun?" And he said, they told me the secrets of the world. They told me everything I wanted to know. And they had advanced science that was way beyond what we had. He said, but they told me that I couldn't go with them because he asked them, where do they live? And, you know, they said, well, we live over in this land. And he said, they would take me with them, but if I went, I wouldn't be able to return. Well, he said, I can't tell the secrets because we're not ready for them. So he wouldn't tell anybody. And interestingly, the Borderland Sciences research people said, well, you know, we've heard these kind of stories before, and so we kind of believe him. Well, he said one day, it was about 9 o'clock at night, and a car went past the house. But it was going down a track that was actually just a dead end, and it ended where a pile of boulders were. So the only way to get back would be to back the car up. You couldn't really turn around. Well, they sat there and they didn't see the car come back at all. Well, they went to bed really late and they didn't hear the car. The next morning, they followed the tracks down. They went as far as the boulder, but the car wasn't there. And then he said, well, you know, there has been a series of perfect murders around here. He said, a man murdered his two wives. I don't know why he had two wives. And he said, it was down near the canyon. Well, this man was later found dead in his car with the doors shut and the windows locked. He had an empty rifle in his hands and there was another loaded rifle on the seat beside him. He said, but the coroner never did work out what killed him. So it wasn't the gun. It wasn't the bullets. So something killed him and he was locked inside his car. And he said, this land has a way of, correcting the wrongs. It will see that the wrongs are corrected. He said, we were lucky that we left when we did. He said, but not everybody's that lucky.
Wow. Unbelievable stuff. Fascinating stories. Always great to chat with you. I know we're coming into the roundup here. We've got about 3 minutes left together, Steph. Do you have another quick short story you want to share with us or some insight on what you think is really going on?
I'll just give you another quick one that happened in England in 1997, and it was the Cumbrian Lake District, which is very, very pretty, very hilly, beautiful area. And a man called Mr. Lee and his son Connor, they'd left relatives some distance away. They'd been visiting, and they drove off in their car, and they went missing. Well, their car was found a fortnight later, and it had been in the woods. So it had tumbled off. They'd had a crash, and it had tumbled off and gone into the woods. But the very strange thing was that when they were found, of course, they were deceased, but the coroner found a strange lipstick mark on the boy's face. So the suggestion was, perhaps, that one of his relatives had kissed him on his departure. The coroner said, well, actually, it's a kind of lipstick that's really very popular with teenage girls. He said, and actually, the boy's lipstick mark was placed on him at least 10 days after he died. So he didn't have it on him when he'd left the relative's house. Well, they never could work out how the lipstick mark ended up on the boy, because it was definitely placed there after he died. So was it perhaps somebody who had been in a crash, another car, and they'd been trying to console the boy? Was it a group of people that came along and found the bodies and it was some kind of ghoulish dare? They could never work it out.
That is very bizarre. There's more stories like this in her books. She's got 10 different books covering all different aspects of this. And, Steph, I'd love to have you back on. I know you've done books on other topics as well, including exorcism and demonic realm and such. And I'd love to chat with you about that in the future on the show. But I hope that people will pick up your books and look into your research, because you've got a lot of really great stories that you've collected. And again, people can write to me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll forward your contact information onto them if they have their own stories, encounters, theories, and ideas behind what's going on, so that it can be shared and perhaps appear in one of your future books.
Yeah, that would be great. Yes, thank you.
Well, Steph, it's a pleasure as always. Be safe and keep us abreast of any new cool developments and stories that you have on, even if we just have you on for a quick segment in the future to update on a story or tell about one of the more chilling tales that you've uncovered. We'd love to have you back. So keep us in mind for that, all right?
Thank you so much. I will do. And thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure. Steph is gone now. She's going to go to enjoy her day over in England. We will take your calls in the next 2 hours. We're going to open up phone lines. I want to hear from you. If you've had weird experiences in the woods, strange encounters, or what you think of the kind of stories that you hear like this, do you believe there is something going on, or is it nothing more than just animals that are attacking, mauling, and acting out? Because we do know that animals are very powerful, mysterious, and they are stealthy, man. There have been people that have seen their children disappear in a blink of an eye, only to find out that a mountain lion or something had grabbed them. Is that what's really going on, or are there beasts that are beyond our understanding that are doing these things? Aliens, creatures, demonic, what are your thoughts? We want to hear from you. For George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM.